Well, I realize that there's all kinds of things going on today. It's the longest day of the year, June 21st. It's always a pleasant moment. National Aboriginal Day. It's Father's Day. And I'm not opposed to any of those, by the way. Pretty hard to be opposed to a part of the seasons, I guess. But at the same time, some people have asked me over various periods of time, you know, what do I do on days like Father's Day? And I say, well, I look at the lectionary and see what the lectionary has to say about fathers. And if it doesn't have anything to say about it, then I preach on what it has to say. Because for better or for worse, and as I'm sure you all know, I think it is for better, we're a lectionary-based church, which moves us through those seasons of the church here in a way that makes sense to a group of men and women who got together under the direction of the Holy Spirit to lay out the lectionary for us. So it's not that I don't think Father's Day matters. I like Father's Day. I'm wearing a Father's Day tie today that I got a number of years ago. But I think it's more important for us to continue this journey we're on with churches all over the world following the lectionary. And I think because of that, we see things that we might not otherwise. And this morning, we're going to be looking at our Old Testament lesson, and we're going to be looking at it from a perspective that is a little bit different, perhaps, than what some people have taken from the story. Malcolm Gladwell, he's written a number of books, Outliers and a few other things. He's a very engaging writer and speaker as well. And I saw him talking about a book he's written recently about David and Goliath. And he's written it from the perspective that makes historical sense, but is not necessarily the way that we may have interpreted it as a child. This story was always told to me, and the David versus Goliath trope that we see in culture is always being taken from the perspective of you have mighty Goliath and you have little David, and it was an essentially unfair fight. And that's true, it was an essentially unfair fight. The problem was that Goliath was on the unfair end, which is one of those things that when we look at the story simply from on the basis of size, we realize that Goliath is much larger. If we look at the story on the basis of hand-to-hand with human beings combat experience, Goliath is certainly more experienced and would you'd think would be the winner. But it's primarily because we don't really know much about slings. When we think of a sling, we tend to think of a slingshot, or perhaps as, you know, I don't know, sort of something that will propel a rock, you know, maybe half again as far as we might be able to throw it with our bare hands. A sling is a profoundly lethal weapon. It's something that has been used off and on in warfare for millennia. And while it's quite true that Goliath was larger, that he was better trained, perhaps a better way to look at this would be from the perspective of a young woman trained in Olympic match shooting with a handgun going up against an extremely large person with a club. That's an unfair fight, but the large person has the disadvantage. And in this case, Goliath was at a disadvantage. And when I grew up hearing this story, all I ever heard was that Goliath was the most likely to win, which of course he was, if you look at it from the perspective of going, you know, sword to sword. But David never had any inclination of going sword to sword against Goliath. And that's where the sermon title comes from. Courage and use your gifts. It's sort of an odd way to come at this story that we know so well. But David was perfectly prepared to meet Goliath, or for that matter, to meet any other human being in hand-to-hand combat, where David got to choose, if not the ground of the conflict, at least the weapons used. Because what David had been doing, whether he knew it or not, over the previous years as a shepherd, is he had been honing the skills that would allow him to defeat Goliath. He might not have looked at it that way. As the youngest child, he may have looked at it as being put upon and being left with the sheep while his older brothers got to do the fun stuff, and I expect he probably did. If nothing else, we have the story of when David came to take provisions to his brothers on the battlefield, and they roundly rebuked him for trying to be where he shouldn't be. I hear hints in that story of this is a behavior that's happened before, that David's always trying to get in with his older brothers, as younger brothers always do. So David may not have enjoyed in many ways this whole idea of being the shepherd and being out there dealing with sheep and with all kinds of beings and things that want to eat sheep and all that came with it. But what that did is that prepared him, without him knowing it, for a conflict that would be of tremendous importance to the people of Israel and still has importance as a story coming down to our own day. David goes to Saul and says, "This Philistine is causing you problems. Don't be afraid. I will go and take care of it." And Saul, of course, says, "You're crazy. You're only a boy. This is a fighting man." I mean, that's exactly what I would have said. You know, no, don't be ridiculous. And David then gives a bit of his training that has nothing to do with learning how to use a sword or throw a spear. It's all about doing what needs to be done no matter what. And what David is being trained in as a shepherd, not only in the skills of herding sheep, but also in the skills of seeing what needs to be done and having the courage to do what needs to be done. "When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. And if it turned on me, I seized it by its hair and struck and killed it," which I think is really quite the thing. I'm not exactly sure what that means, other than it sounds to me that in this case, David was not using long-distance missile weapons. He was using whatever he had at hand, knives, swords, sticks, I don't know, but was able to accomplish these sorts of things, which I can't imagine would not engender within you a certain amount of courage and confidence. One of the things that we've all seen in our lives is that when you do something difficult, it gives you the confidence to do other things that are difficult, even if they're radically different. It reminds you of all that's been built into you, all of your experience, all of the things that you have to offer. And these things were building David's confidence. And not just a simplistic confidence in his own ability, because he goes on to say that the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. David was somebody who lived his life, even as a young boy, and I'm not sure what age he was here. He's referred to as a boy by everyone, so I would guess he has to be, you know, in his teens at probably the oldest. He lived his life in a clear understanding that God was with him and that God was accomplishing things through him and providing protection and opportunities to learn and to grow in much the same way we do. That understanding that we have, that God doesn't just leave us to do whatever happens at random, but he's also intimately involved with us as we move through our lives and through our days, exposing us to opportunities to know him better, to know ourselves better, to minister to other people. And David was aware of this, and that's what he looked at. Looked at these things from that perspective as well, not just somebody who knew something about how to herd sheep, but that God had been working through him and had preserved him in other times, and that gave him another kind of confidence that God would continue to preserve him, even in the midst of a fight with a Philistine, with a giant. What's interesting, of course, is that when Saul decides that, okay, I can't talk him out of it, may as well just give in to it, he puts a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head and a sword on the tunic. And like it says, and he tried walking around because he was not used to them. And this is a sign of David's wisdom, even at that age, that if somebody's going to give you a new tool of any kind to do anything, you should at least try it out a little bit before you go into the where you're going to actually make use of it. The first time you learn how to drive something, you probably shouldn't go and drive on the highway. The first time you you get a new piece of equipment on a farm, I mean, I'm assuming you at least figure out what it does in every way to make sure it's going to fit what you expect it to do. Then he tried it, and he says, no, I cannot go with these. And what I take from this, and as I'm looking at this story, from the perspective of the gifts that we have, it's important for us to use our gifts, not someone else's. Saul was a competent military person. He could make use of these things. The helmet and the sword and the armor, they weren't useless in and of themselves. They just weren't useful to David because they weren't part of what he could use. They weren't part of his toolkit, if you will. And this was not the time to learn how to use them. He didn't have time. He needed to go with what he actually knew. And so he went into battle, into combat with Goliath, with the things he knew. He stopped by, got some ammunition for his sling, got some smooth stones to give you some idea of how absurdly I misinterpreted this story as a younger person. I thought that he was crazy. He should have got jaggedy stones because they would have hurt more. Except a jagged rock doesn't fly straight any more than anything else. What David was doing is he was taking advantage of every thing he could that would make it as likely as possible for him to be successful. And so he went into combat with Goliath, with his staff, which I obviously don't think he was going to make much use of, but it was a part of what he, when he was a shepherd, he always had his staff. It might have been almost a form of comfort for him to have that with him. He picked up his smooth stones, which would make it as likely as possible for him to hit what he was planning on slinging at. Went and met Goliath, who, of course, didn't understand at all what was going on. Sees this boy and complains about that and asks if he's a dog and all of that. David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with a sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." All those gathered here, it drops down a little bit, will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. David has placed himself and his gifts into the path of what God is trying to accomplish. And we look at his statement to Goliath, and we almost look at it and say, well, that's kind of boastful, isn't it? We're not supposed to be like that. And I don't know if that's particularly a Christian thing or a Canadian thing, that we think you shouldn't say things like that. But he's not really being boastful as much as saying, this is just what is. I'm here as God, under God's direction, to accomplish what God has asked me to do. And then he does. He puts a stone in the sling, strikes it, hits the Philistine in the forehead, falls face down on the ground, and the story goes on to end. It was not that it was so much a fixed fight from the beginning. Just because you're good with a sling doesn't mean you're going to hit what you aim at every time. That's why he got five stones. You know, he wasn't crazy. But slingers, I don't know if you've ever seen a sling in action. They are just extraordinary. And the other thing I thought, like we often think, you know, five smooth stones. And I always thought as a kid, like a stone about, you know, maybe as big as a quarter, a little bit bigger, but then round. Sling stones were often about the size of a baseball. They came out of the sling at subsonic speeds. They're not like a bullet. They don't break the speed of sound. But you really can't follow them with your eye. Because as anyone who has swung anything around your head and then let go of it on purpose or by accident, you know how far that goes. Because of centrifugal force, and you get all kinds of physics involved. David went into this combat knowing, not just on the basis of God's promised to be with him, but knowing also that his life had prepared him to be successful here, that his gifts, and we're expanding it slightly because we don't, I'm not so much thinking of just talents, but gifts as well, had provided for him this opportunity. But this opportunity only could have been taken if he would have had the courage to take it. Because that's the two parts that come up here. And we don't see a lot of it in the story. We don't see David wrestling with fear of facing Goliath. But what we do know about David from reading all over the place is that he wasn't a megalomaniac. He wasn't crazy. So he had to at least have some concern stepping into that. And he exercised the courage that comes from knowing that God is with you and knowing that you are prepared, that your gifts have been honed to make you ready for what it is you're about to do. And he took courage from that and stepped onto the field of battle with Goliath and was successful. Because all the gifts in the world won't do you any good if you don't actually use them. It's easy for us to discount our gifts. We see this all the time, where people talk about what they're not good at, and they say, oh, I could never do that, and that's okay, you're not supposed to do that. One of the things that I've learned to do is when people say things, well, like they hear I preach or they hear I talk or something, they say, oh, I could never do that. I say, well, you probably don't have to do that. What can you do? And I have never yet run across anybody who doesn't do something so much better than I can that it isn't just a wonder to me that they can. That they've put in the work to become, well, to become organists, to become accountants, to become farmers, to become all of these things that you can do that I cannot. And I'm a bit in awe of many of these talents. And I don't try to do them because they're your gift. And by letting you exercise your gifts and you letting me exercise my gifts, we all accomplish so much more than we could if any one of us tried to do all of it ourselves or any of us tried to do it just ourselves. But it still takes courage to exercise those gifts. Over time, it becomes easier, of course. I hardly ever really worry before stepping into the pulpit that I'm going to make an idiot of myself. But every once in a while, I wonder. I just think, these people actually want to listen to me? Are they somehow here because they have to? No, and that's just part of being a human being. And when that happens, we exercise courage in something like preaching for me on the basis of years of experience that it'll at least be okay. It might not be great, but it'll at least be okay. I'm not going to go up there and speak gibberish. So that's just away we go. But we still need to exercise courage as we use our gifts. Because we're given gifts. David was provided with gifts of all sorts, and we're given gifts to make a difference in the world. The gifts that we're given are to accomplish things, not just to be comfortable. And I don't know, as I've said before, I don't know what other people's gifts are. And I don't know how you're being called to exercise them. But if there's something that we can take from the story of David and Goliath that's perhaps a little different than what we may have taken before, it's that we've been provided the gifts that we need to accomplish what we need to accomplish. But sometimes we just need to screw up our courage to go and use those gifts. Sometimes we need to be reminded that we have them. We need to be reminded that when God asks us to go and do things, he's not just throwing us to the wolves with no background, with no abilities. That's not how God works. We're asked to go and do things that we have been prepared for. And sometimes they're a bit beyond what we think we can do, and that's when the courage really comes in. Sometimes the task that we've been asked to do seems larger than we can accomplish. But God says, I'll be with you. And we take courage and exercise those gifts that have been built into us to accomplish those things that we need to do. David exercised courage to go out and do the things that he had learned how to do as a shepherd in a completely different context. And because of it, he was successful. Extraordinary things came out of that meeting on that plain between David and Goliath. And they came because David went out there and said, "This is what I'm good at. This is what has been built into me. These are my talents. This is how I can use my experience to the best." Not taking somebody else's gifts, well-meaning as Saul was, not being loaded down with things that will get in the way of what I'm good at. I'll go out, I'll take advantage of my experience, I'll do what I can do, and God will care for the results. And we see those results. We're not forced or asked even to face giants in a real sense, of course, but some of the things we're asked to do are giants in a metaphorical sense, and they seem much larger than us, much larger than we can do. And if you're facing any of those, courage. and use your gifts. Look what it did for David. That same God can do the same for you. Amen.